From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the U.S. is fortifying its military presence in the Middle East as a result of threats from Iran. In addition to the aircraft carrier, the USS Abraham Lincoln, the Pentagon is sending the 22nd Marine Expeditionary Unit, B-52s from Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana, and a Patriot missile battery. Yesterday, a senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard commander said, quote, the U.S. military presence used to be a threat, but now represents a target, end quote. Have we reached a new and dangerous level of saber-rattling? We'll talk about it with Indiana Congressman Jim Banks in just a moment. And China announced it will raise tariffs on $60 billion in U.S. goods in retaliation for the U.S. hiking duties on Chinese goods as trade talks broke down. Some are warning the tit-for-tat between the two major economic powers could damage the global economy. But is there more than just the economy at stake in the outcome? Here to talk about it a little bit later is Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China. And speaking of China, on Friday, I joined with fellow commissioners on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom in briefing Vice President Pence on our 2019 report on the state of international religious liberty. China was a major focus of the report. Commissioner Gary Bauer joins me with more on that topic. And this week, the House of Representatives will vote on H.R. 5, the so-called Equality Act. Well, let me tell you, there's nothing that is equal about it other than the growing opposition from both the left and the right. I'll talk with a left-leaning opponent, Jennifer Chavez, with the Women's Liberation Front, later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. Let me extend once again an invitation. We've got a few spaces left, and time is running short, but coming up July the 7th through the 14th, if you'd like to join my wife and I and several members of the FRC team on a fantastic cruise to Alaska, well, you can join us. I'll be joined by General Jerry Boykin of FRC, former Ambassador Ken Blackwell, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. We'll have a great time together just enjoying God's majestic creation as well as getting a behind-the-scenes look at what's happening here in Washington, D.C. To find out how you can join us, go to TonyPerkins.com. Okay, according to an Iranian Students News Agency report, a senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard commander said on Sunday the U.S. military presence in the Gulf used to be a serious threat but now represents a target. U.S. military has sent forces, including an aircraft carrier, B-52 bombers, to the Middle East in a move that U.S. officials said was to counter clear indications of threats from Iran to American forces and interest in the region. The USS Abraham Lincoln is replacing another carrier rotated out of the Gulf last month. This is a new level of standoff, tension, if you will, between the two countries. Joining me now to discuss this developing story is Congressman Jim Banks, a Navy reservist who represents the 3rd District of Indiana and serves on the House Armed Services Committee. Congressman Banks, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, good to be with you.
Are we reaching a new level of saber-rattling with Iran?
Well, I don't know about that, Tony, but we could mix a couple of different presidential metaphors here, whether it's Teddy Roosevelt's carry a big stick or the peace through strength mantra of the Reagan era. President Trump has adopted both of those policies in what he's doing today, which is pushing a greater presence in that part of the world and projecting the American strength as a deterrence to the Iranian regime, who we know and expect to continue the aggressive actions that we've seen coming from them in recent months.
Now, we even saw, obviously, this is a very strategic part of the world for many reasons. One is energy, although we're not as dependent upon foreign oil as we were prior to this administration. A lot of oil is moved through that area. And, of course, the Iranian threats that are coming forth as a result of the United States tightening the sanctions on them. But there are some issues there for security for the United States. Do not have a presence.
Well, there's no doubt about it. But we have to remember for a moment, Tony, why we are where we are today. Last week was the one-year anniversary of President Trump pulling out of the JCPOA, a terrible and disastrous deal that was negotiated by President Obama, which gave hundreds of millions of dollars in cash to the Iranian regime, who we know contributed much of that money and even more money to many of their proxies like Hamas, who just last week was responsible for firing over 700 rockets into Israel. So under the Obama regime, you had a policy of peace through appeasement that led to the negotiation of the JCPOA, truly a disastrous deal. President Trump got us out of it for a lot of good reasons. And our tough sanctions on Iran, which have been ratcheted up recently, have put so much pressure on them that now they're increasing their activities. And our hope is that by projecting a greater military presence there to counteract their activities, we can bring them back to the table to negotiate a new deal, hopefully one that doesn't allow them ever to obtain a nuclear weapon, something that the JCPOA and under President Obama was something that their deal clearly would have led to in the future.
Now, Congressman Banks, as I mentioned earlier, the new level of saber-rattling, I think more on behalf of the Iranians, but to make the comment that the U.S. presence in that region in the Gulf used to be a threat, now it's seen as a target, is that a new level of antagonism from Iran to the United States?
Well, I think so. Secretary of State Pompeo has placed a great deal of his attention in this administration on the threat of Iran and much of their activities. But in recent weeks, we've seen a rise, an increase in this type of aggressive behavior from the Iranian regime, which is what has led us to the point that we are today, increasing our military presence there. Again, as a deterrence, but also to be there to react at a moment's notice if they need to.
Now, this has been a pretty significant ramp up, and it's based upon what we're told is good intelligence, that there were threats being pursued by Iran toward the United States or United States interest. And then we actually saw, I mean, what do we know about the Saudi oil tankers that were sabotaged? I mean, are we seeing any connection there?
We apparently so. I mean, we can expect that there is a significant connection. But at the end of the day, Tony, we know that the Iranian regime is the greatest exporter of terrorism, the greatest funder of terrorism around the globe. They are the biggest provocateur in the Middle East. Their activities we should never turn a blind eye to their activities, much like the Obama administration did for 8 years. President Trump won't do that. Positioning very much the United States in a stronger posture as we are there today to counteract their activities if and when we need to.
I mean, I have to say it's refreshing to see America leading with strength and not leading from behind with weakness. But we're seeing now who our real friends are. I mean, are we getting enough support from our European allies?
Well, that's to be determined. As you probably saw, Tony, Secretary of State Pompeo was at Andrews Air Force Base on his way to Moscow to meet with Vladimir Putin. He diverted away from that probably a historic meeting with Putin and instead went to Brussels to meet with our European allies to talk about exactly what you and I are talking about right now, the threat of Iran and what we're going to do about it, to try to bring together a new coalition as the JCPOA, even though we pulled out of it a year ago, has stayed intact between our European allies and Iran. Unfortunately, as Iran has proven, even them pulling away from the deal has left very little groundwork there for that to be effective. So now the time is ripe, which is why Secretary Pompeo has diverted his trip to Brussels to try to round up our European allies in hopes that we can negotiate a new, stronger deal and one that will never allow Iran to possess a nuclear weapon.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to be with us on this. So glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. Congressman Jim Banks, my guest from Indiana, member of the House Armed Services Committee, talking about the developments over the weekend in the Gulf region and the Middle East. Jim, let me ask you this. When you you know, on the world stage today, I mean, you can't, this isn't a game of checkers, it's a game of chess. You can't just look at one country without considering how it's tied to and impacts the others. I mean, obviously, you look at Iran, you've got Israel, but we also have to watch the North Korea with their recent aggressive actions and their connection with Russia. Are any of these things we're seeing right now, in your opinion, interrelated?
Tony, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's all interrelated, foundationally, with and connected or disconnected in ways that we can't ignore. And that's what is refreshing, is that this president has projected such a much more of a stronger, strengthened posture toward countries and regimes like the Iranian regime that we haven't seen for far too long. And that oftentimes in the way that he reacts to North Korea, whether it's abruptly leaving the table from and preventing a bad deal from being negotiated, that projects an American strength to another nation like Iran, that shows them that they're dealing with a president who means what he says, who will not back away, and that affects the way that they retaliate and negotiate too. So I give this administration a whole lot of credit, and it's not just the president. He surrounded himself with great leaders like Secretary Pompeo. They're able to go out and carry out his will in dealing with these countries as well, and I'm hopeful about where we're heading.
You know, and just a reminder for those you know, may not have been around as long, but history, when you look back with Ronald Reagan, who, as you made reference to earlier, his motto was, I think you made reference, in peace, when negotiating with the Russians, and he just said no, got up from the table. You know, his position of strength in a leadership position globally is really what led. Of course, it was in coalition with Margaret Thatcher, and you can even argue with Pope John Paul, brought the wall down in Eastern Europe. And so this leads to benefits to the entire world by America leading and being strong.
Yeah, here we are again with a president who understands that. Tony, 2.5 years ago, I never would have compared this president to Ronald Reagan, but in the way that he has adopted the same sentiment of peace through strength. What he's done over the past 2.5 years to rebuild our military after watching it decimated under the previous administration, he deserves a whole lot of credit for that. And we can't project American strength abroad if we have a weakened military like what we did that this president inherited. Ronald Reagan inherited the same type of weakened military from his predecessor as well, and spent years rebuilding it, and we've benefited from that for decades. Decades from now, we will benefit from the Trump military buildup as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Congressman Jim Banks, thanks so much for joining us today. As always,
great to be with you.
Talking to you. All right, Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana. I think he's absolutely right. America has to be strong. We've got to have a strong military for us to have a strong diplomatic message. And obviously, that's our number one goal, is to resolve these things through discussions. This is one to be praying about. All right, coming up next, China has announced that they will raise tariffs on $60 billion worth of U.S. goods starting June the 1st. Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China, joins me next. Don't go away. Lots more to come.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That's frc.org/ABA laws.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. All right, CNBC reports that China will raise tariffs on $60 billion in U.S. goods in retaliation for the U.S. decision to hike duties on Chinese goods. This comes as trade talks break down between the two countries. Beijing will increase tariffs on more than 5,000 products to as high as 25%. Duties on some other goods will increase to 20%. Those rates will rise from either 10 or 5% previously. The move follows President Donald Trump's decision to raise duties on $200 billion in Chinese products from 25% from 10%. Now, the world's two largest economies have struggled to reach a trade deal. And in a widening conflict that some say threatens to damage the global economy. But is there more at stake here than just the economy? Joining us to talk about it, Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China. He has given briefings at the National Intelligence Council, the CIA, the State Department, and the Pentagon. And he's frequently a guest on various media outlets. Gordon, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
Well, Gordon, we talked about this last week. We thought maybe an agreement would be reached. It has not. Are things escalating here in your view?
Well, things are certainly escalating when you have these tariffs and retaliatory tariffs. But we've got to do this largely because the Chinese steal perhaps $300 to $400 billion of U.S. intellectual property each year. We know that their trade behavior is deteriorating across the board. But at a more fundamental level, we know that China is using the proceeds of commerce with us to expand its military, which is then you have senior officers talking about killing Americans. So we need to disentangle our economies because we need to stop feeding the enemy that threatens us.
So this is about a lot more than the global economy.
Oh, well, certainly. And just to give you an example that people don't talk about. So, for instance, when China joined the World Trade Organization in 2001, a lot of factories left Central America for China at lower cost, all sorts of advantages, and being on that side of the Pacific. Well, if we can get factories to move back to Central America, it will stabilize those societies, bring back prosperity there, which means you have fewer people joining caravans that pressure our southern border. So prosperity in the Central America, the Northern Triangle, that's really good for us, and that's a win on so many different fronts.
When you look at how they're, you said they're using this money for the military, they're also some of this American technology using it for repressive purposes when it comes to religious, I was going to say religious minorities, but they treat everybody equally there. They repress all faiths there. So this is becoming a very repressive regime, which in a sense we're shoring up with our dollars.
Yes, well, so certainly they repress everybody. It's a totalitarian state now. It's gone beyond authoritarianism back, especially with its social credit system. But also religious minorities are the ones who are especially targeted. Of course, we talk about the Muslim Uyghurs in the northwestern part of China. But those concentration camps that we have talked about have now starting to show up in Tibet. And we can see them in the rest of China. This is at the same time where there is an enhanced campaign against Buddhists and also Christians, especially house Christians. So everyone of faith is now being targeted by Xi Jinping. And, of course, they get the money to do this through international commerce with us and with other nations. So the more that we can disentangle our economies, the more we can get our friends to trade with us rather than with the Chinese. This is so much benefit. This is so beneficial for us on every different level.
Well, Gordon, but not everybody, especially when I look at the business community, has the steady hand of the president when it comes to these negotiations. As a result of China's pushback on raising tariffs, you had major stock indexes dove more than 2% amid this escalation. I mean, the business community very nervous about this. Did they not see the end game here or what could come of this?
Well, markets move to their own rhythm. And I think for a very long time, they've been ignoring many of the political considerations in China that were really pushing Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, away from a deal. So markets are very bad at evaluating risk. Also, markets don't actually look at the national security implications of decisions that an American president makes. So, yeah, the markets move one way, but that shouldn't hold us hostage for what's best for the American economy in the long run, because markets don't really look at long run. They look at short term, but also American national security. And indeed, I think the best interests of the international community. Markets aren't supposed to take that into account. They don't. But the president of the United States, that's in his job description.
Right. A good point. These markets are one-dimensional. It's about the economy. It's about money. It's not about everything else. But let's talk a little bit about those being affected by the tariffs that the Chinese are pushing forward with. And part of that is U.S. farmers who are and have been supportive of President Trump. When you look at wheat, sugar, peanuts, chicken, and turkey are going to be the targets of these. Can the Chinese afford to go without American products in that sense?
Apparently not. There is some reporting, which is yet to be confirmed, that the Chinese state enterprises are actually importing American farm products without tariffs because they get a special exemption, and they need to do that. Part of it is, right now you have African swine flu, which affects pork, pigs, doesn't affect humans, and it's decimated the Chinese pork population, which means they need to buy it. They need to buy it from someone. And if they don't buy it from us, I think what happens is then we sell to other customers around the world if we don't sell to the Chinese. Yes, the American farm sector is going to be hurt. That's why President Trump had those special subsidies. Those subsidies are not going to cover all of the damage. But eventually, we'll see American farmers adjust, just like American consumers will adjust.
Well, Gordon, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. And we're going to continue to follow this because this has such major ramifications for so much around the world. And appreciate you keeping us up to date.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
All right, Gordon Chang. Find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. This is something to keep your eye on. And again, here's the president leading. It's amazing, putting American interest first. Speaking of China, we're going to continue that conversation on religious liberty and the lack thereof in China. Gary Bauer, fellow commissioner on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, joins me next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. This past Saturday, I had the privilege of speaking at Truett-McConnell University, giving their commencement address, and the focus was on religious freedom, the growing persecution here in the United States, the opposition, and how we've got to live out our faith. Well, I wasn't the only one with that message. On Saturday, Vice President Mike Pence spoke to students at my alma mater, Liberty University, with a very similar message. And in fact, he made comment about the growing persecution of Christians abroad. Here's what he had to say.
The truth is, we live in a time when the freedom of religion is under assault. Yesterday, I was informed by the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom that today, Christians suffer more persecution around the world than any other religion.
Well, joining me now to talk about not only the vice president's speech, but the briefing that we were a part of giving him on Friday as it pertained to international religious freedom is my good friend Gary Bauer, fellow commissioner on the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom and the former president of the Family Research Council. Gary, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's always great to be with you. And it's been an exciting couple of days as we've been able to work together to elevate the issue of religious persecution and particularly what's been happening to Christians around the world.
Well, when you look at this administration and you see the vice president making, such clear statements as he did Saturday at Liberty University, it is a new day when it comes to America's leaders being willing to step out and say exactly what's happening.
Boy, Tony, you really summed that up correctly. I've been in Washington longer than I care to remember, and you've been in the battle for a long time. And there have been many years, particularly just a few years ago, when we had an administration in office that seemed to be very hostile on these issues, seemed quite frankly to be hostile toward believing Christians on the sanctity of life and marriage and a lot of other issues. But this administration, from the very top, the president, the vice president, on to key people at the Department of State and throughout the federal government, are all very sensitive to this issue of religious freedom. They understand that America was built on the idea that liberty comes from God, not government. And it's been exciting to see them not only put the right kind of judges on the court so we can feel more certain about our religious liberty here, but to see their willingness by working with the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, which you and I proudly serve on, to stand up for religious liberty around the world. It's a new day in this city, and it's great to have this opportunity for us and for millions of Christians around the country that look to you and to the Commission for leadership.
Gary, I was just talking with Gordon Chang about China and the trade negotiations, and that was one of the issues that you brought up with the vice president on Friday when we briefed him on the report. And you have long been sounding the alarm over China, and it's progressively gotten worse, and we've reached really what you could describe as a crisis when it comes to religious freedom in that country.
Well, it is amazing. We have to remind ourselves that it is still communist China. The government there, the country, is run by the Chinese Communist Party. And years ago, Tony, when I was at FRC, we took a very strong stand against giving China any trade benefits. We rejected the argument that trade with China would change China, would make China more open. In fact, we argued that it would be more likely to make China, make the United States change, because the American business community would come to rely on the Chinese market. And sadly, I think that's exactly what's happened. China's declared war on all religious belief, but they've certainly singled out in recent years Christians. They're now doing the same with Uyghur Muslims in China. And sadly, we see parts of the American business community defending China and sort of running interference for them. So it's a tragic situation. But again, I'm glad that this administration is willing to not take them on, is willing to take them on not only on their unfair trade practices, but also on the violation of religious liberty and human rights.
Well, when you talk about the business community, you've made this point, Gary, that, as you just said, that we've been changed, and I would say the business community has been changed more by the relationship with China than China being changed by us. We see the American business community just jettisoning any concern about religious freedom, whether it be here or abroad.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I've seen some of these good American companies. I think somebody needs to remind them that they are American companies and that they ought to stand for America's values, particularly our founding values. But you see companies threatening to boycott states like North Carolina and Georgia, Indiana, and other states for just standing up for religious liberty. Very sad.
But they don't have a problem doing business with China. Yeah, that's...
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
Yeah.
Gary Bauer, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Great to be with you, Tony.
All right. Gary Bauer, to find out more about what Gary is doing, go to the website tonyperkins.com, and you can follow the links over. All right. When we come back, the Equality Act, not so equal, except the growing opposition from both the left and the right. I'm going to be joined by someone from the left. Next, here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. Be interesting.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. The website is tonyperkins.com. Let me extend an invitation to you. For those of you that might like to join my wife and I and a number of the FRC leadership team on a cruise to Alaska, July the 7th through the 14th, I'll have General Jerry Boykin with me, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, former Ambassador Kim Blackwell. We'll have a great time just enjoying nature. It's a beautiful, beautiful place if you've never been to Alaska. It's very relaxing. To see the glaciers, it's a fantastic trip. Plus, you'll get a behind-the-scenes look at what's happening in Washington, D.C. with our leadership team. To find out more how you can be a part of that, go to tonyperkins.com. Okay, our friends at the Heritage Foundation hosted an unusual panel discussion entitled The Inequality of the Equality Act, Concerns from the Left, which featured an all-left-leaning panel. Now, one of the viewpoints represented on the panel was that of heartbroken parents whose children had gotten sucked into the school's propaganda about transgenderism and subsequently identified as transgender, wanting to present themselves as the opposite gender. Joining me now is Jennifer Chavez, a board member for the Women's Liberation Front, a left-leaning feminist group, which has stood shoulder to shoulder with conservative groups like the Family Research Council as we oppose the Equality Act. Jennifer, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I want to thank you for coming on. And, you know, I don't need to go into it, but there's probably a host of things we wouldn't agree on. But this one we do. And why is that? Why are you speaking out against this?
Right. Well, I think it actually is important for us to acknowledge that we disagree on so many, many things. But the reason that this is so important is because I think the only way that people in a really polarized, even a polarized society, can ever get to a point where we can work on problems is if we can agree on the fundamental importance of things like basic truth. And, you know, my organization, the Women's Liberation Front, believes that, you know, regardless how you feel about various different issues, that the word woman is meaningful and the word girl is meaningful, and the experience of living as a female is real, it's material, and it has significance. And so even though we might disagree about many things with our conservative woman partners that we're working with on this issue, we both agree on that fundamental truth that being a woman is a meaningful thing in the world today, and that it's something that we can meaningfully organize around and work together on.
Jennifer, I think there's probably something else that we agree on, and that is we ought to at least have the conversation, that we ought to have the facts. We ought to be able to have the conversation about these types of issues. But increasingly, we're not seeing that because there's kind of like a blackout in the media where only one side is really getting an opportunity to speak.
Right. Well, you know, when you look over to the UK, you see something that's really quite different, and it's quite a contrast, and it really stands out when you compare. Here in the United States, very few journalists with, you know, national reach and national name recognition are willing to even touch the issue of gender identity and the transgender movement and questions like that, unless it's in a completely 110%, you know, sort of fawning and supportive way. So when you search the term transgender or gender identity in, say, the New York Times or the Washington Post, you see story after story of sort of, you know, sappy hero stories or, you know, heart-wrenching stories about, you know, listen to this child's story. But what you don't hear are the opposing views of women who are raising concerns about, you know, everything about this ideology, including an increasing number of young women who did at one point identify as transgender and have now desisted, and who are now saying that the you know, there are serious problems with the movement and its ideas, and it's manifesting in ideas that are really very harmful to young girls who are vulnerable. For example, young girls who've had you know, violence or sexual trauma in their lives will sometimes turn to this ideology thinking that it provides answers to them, and they will take, you know, cross-sex hormones that, you know, in some circumstances will produce sterility, and then they'll turn around after they've gone through, you know, this very difficult time in their lives, and every, you know, life is difficult and awkward for everyone in their teen years, and some, you know, some of us barely make it through. When you get through in your mid-20s and you look back, some of these young women realize that they were really sold a bill of goods.
Well, and oftentimes what we're seeing increasingly, who's selling that bill of goods, it's at the juncture of public education, where we see a lot of the schools promoting this, and you're right, there is like it's like going through what I call the you know, the reentry into from space, where you have this blackout and you're confused. You really don't have communication with the rest of the world because you don't hear what people are saying, and you question a lot of things, and that's normal. And a lot of people that will question their sexuality return, you know, at some point. But they're locking them in. As soon as they have a question or a feeling, there's this transgender push, I would say indoctrination, that our children are getting in the schools.
Yes, I have to agree. And, of course, you know, this gets into an area that is, there's a little bit of, you know, we have to talk very carefully because, of course, in my organization is fully supportive of lesbian and gay women, and bisexual women and gay men, but the difference that we see, we just don't see any commonality with between that issue and gender identity. And the reasons are many, but just to start out with one, you know, what we're seeing in schools is not just a push to support children and nurture them and accept their questioning and accept their even questioning of their identities and to really respect that process that children go through in a careful way. But instead, what we're seeing is an aggressive push to dictate a particular way of looking at it, a way that says that if you have the feeling that you might be the opposite sex, if you really identify with the stereotypical things that are associated with the opposite sex, then you may actually, in fact, be the opposite sex. So that is a very, very confusing thing for a child to hear from anyone, much less from an authority figure like a teacher or the principal. So children are hearing these sorts of things in assembly rooms. They're being read books and read these, taught this terminology at a very young age. And I think that, where it crosses the line is that it's not letting children, experience their own, find their way through their own experience of developing their identity. Instead, it's really pushing them in one direction.
Well, Jennifer, let me ask, why do you think that is? Why do you think that's happening?
Well, you could look at it charitably and assume that even those, schools and teachers and parents who are acting in good faith think that they're doing the right thing by trying to foster acceptance and support of young children. And, of course, everyone wants to do that. What we are seeing more of, though, is that a lot of this curriculum is being developed by advocacy organizations. It's not an organic outgrowth from the experience of children and their parents and their teachers. This sort of curriculum is coming in a very top-down way, and it's very specifically designed not to help children, but to really kind of solidify in people's minds this idea of gender identity and the idea that it's innate and that we must respect it. Not just respect people, but respect the idea. And, so it's a very top-down, activist-driven curriculum.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Jennifer Chavez, my guest. She's with the Women's Liberation Front. If you're just joining us, we were talking a moment ago, there's probably a lot of things that we don't agree on. One thing we do agree on is H.R. 5, the so-called Equality Act, is problematic for children. Jennifer, let me ask you, as you talk about this top-down curriculum that's coming in, this view, are you concerned that parents are being left out of this conversation?
Yes. We have heard from many parents who have reached out to us and expressed a great deal of concern and alarm and a feeling that they are sort of losing their ability to work through these sorts of issues with their children in a loving way, in the way that they think is best. And you can see that it's not just anecdotal. You can see in school policies, for example, in the policy of the school where my child attends, it's written right out there that if my child were to tell a teacher that he identifies as the opposite sex, if my child said he didn't want me to know, the teachers at the school would be prohibited from telling me. So there could be something really serious that my child is going through, and I might want to try to understand, has someone told him something that's confusing? Has he experienced trauma that he's trying to deal with? But I wouldn't even know it. And, that's just one example of how parents are being explicitly locked out of the conversation.
As a parent of five, that's troubling to me because I think I have a greater interest, concern about my children than anyone else. They're my children. I want to see them succeed. I want them to do well, and I want to be a part of any major decision they make. And I think someone stepping between me and my children is it should be problematic, I think, to any parent facing that. And one of the things you did at this panel where you were at the Heritage Foundation, you actually read some of these statements that you had obtained and seen from parents. What were some of those messages that that parents had regarding this whole, you know, primarily in the schools, but how their children were being led down this path and they were excluded from that?
Right. Well, if you don't mind, I can just read a few short excerpts from one of the testimonials that we heard. You know, I was shocked. I'm starting with a quote. I was shocked when my 13-year-old daughter told me she was really my transgender son. She had no masculine interests, hated all sports, but as a smart, quirky teen on the autism spectrum, she had a long history of not fitting in with girls. Where did she get the idea she was transgender? From a school presentation at a school where over 5% of the student body called themselves trans or non-binary, and where several students were already on hormones, and one had had a mastectomy at the age of 16. So this, and that's the end of the quote, this theme comes up really rather frequently where you have a group of often young women who, you know, who basically what you're seeing is a social phenomenon, mm-hmm. much like happened years ago with eating disorders, and just as we know, things like suicidal ideation can travel amongst teens who are going through an awful lot. And so this is a recurring theme that children are learning this idea from their friends, and then they're sort of getting locked in socially. And of course, online, you get a lot of you get rewarded these days for saying, you know, I have this special identity. And that can become really, you know, enticing to a young child who's trying to figure themselves out. And then, you know, before you know it, they just realize that it hasn't cleared up their confused feelings, that they were really just going through teenage angst. And then, you know, and then they find themselves without support. Then they find themselves being rejected by their families and their children. Even some young women have said that they, you know, could no longer find support from their counselors because their counselors just didn't know what to do with them after they stopped affirming. There was very little that they knew to do to help their underlying problems.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like a social contagion where you see this move through you know, schools. I mean, you see the rise in the percentage of those identifying as transgender and such as a result of this. Jennifer, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for coming on FRC on the Washington Watch with FRC and having this conversation, and appreciate you speaking out.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Jennifer Chavez with the Women's Liberation Front talking about H.R. 5, which will be on the House floor for a vote on Friday. I'm going to talk more about this, about what's happening in our schools going on this week, later on in this week. It's fascinating to me, children so impressionable that we can't allow a prayer or even God bless America, but yet we can bring this type of indoctrination into our schools. All right, out of time, folks. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.